It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in our second half hour, my guests are the two co-hosts of a new podcast series called Heartland Mainland, the Iowa-China podcast. It looks at connections between the People's Republic of China and Iowa. That coming up in our second half hour. But first, well, we've all heard the saying that the eyes are the window to the soul. Your eyes may also be the window to any future mental decline. Iowa State University researchers are looking into how an image of your retina may help determine your risk for Alzheimer's disease even before other symptoms are detectable. Joining us this half hour, two of the researchers involved in this team. Tricia Nepel is with us, Associate Professor of ISU's Department of Human Development and Family Studies, as well as Heather Greenlee, Professor of Biomedical Sciences at Iowa State University. Tricia and Heather, welcome to our studio.
Thanks for having us.
I'm going to reach out this half hour if you have any questions specifically about Alzheimer's, 1-866-780-9100, or, of course, about this research, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Tricia, perhaps you can start us off with this grant from the National Institute on Aging that you've been awarded there, your team. This is a tremendously important area of study. Alzheimer's Association estimating there are almost 6 million Americans living with Alzheimer's disease, and that number is expected to grow dramatically, 14 million by 2050. What are you looking at specifically, you and Heather, here?
Well, we are interested in looking at what might predict or put people at risk for mild cognitive impairment or Alzheimer's disease. I've been fortunate enough to be part of a longitudinal or a long-term study. It's called the Family Transitions Project. We've had participants who have been very willing to let us into their homes for the past 30 years. And we have information on these participants, these people in rural Iowa, who information on social indicators such as substance use, economic indicators such as how they're faring in the transitions in different parts of their lives, and their social relationships. And so we're interested in looking at how these long-term social indicators, these economic indicators, might impact their cognition as they are aging and getting into the retirement phase of their lives. We're interested in that long-term impact, and we're also interested in maybe what's happening with them right now as they transition to retirement. Are those added stressors somehow impacting their cognitive impairment? So that was really the premise of the study in terms of what I'm interested in. And Heather, my friend and colleague, says, you know, I'm studying the retina, and maybe that has an impact as well.
Right, right. This is really interesting, this collaboration here with all the data points that you've pointed to, Tricia, but also you Heather, you tell us more about your work you've done. You've done work studying the retinas of animals.
Right. So since about 2006, I started collaborating with scientists at the National Animal Disease Center. full disclosure, my husband is my primary collaborator there. He's a veterinary researcher there. And they study probably the most well-known neurodegenerative disease in animals would be the prion diseases. So cattle have something called bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or mad cow. Deer have chronic wasting disease, or CWD, which is becoming a real problem in Iowa at the moment. Sheep have scrapie. At any rate, we were curious if we could use retinal imaging or retinal function testing to identify animals that might be carrying the disease before we could identify them in other ways. And so I guess about a decade later, we have been able to show that changes in the retina are a very early indicator of diseased animals. And so based on that, we were interested to see if changes in the retina could be an indicator for humans, which were likely to develop cognitive impairment and Alzheimer's disease. I do need to say there's been a lot of work that has looked at the retina in people who have already been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And in fact, there are changes that are detectable and has been shown by many, many different investigators. So our work is really trying to determine if, pardon me, to determine if we can use a retinal image to essentially to see how early a retinal image might indicate a disease state.
Okay, so you really would, the idea here would be, if successful, Heather, I'm gathering from your description that we might, okay, in the best case scenario, we have our annual physical checkup, and of course the doctor looks in our eyes anyway, but there would be an extra check there. Even before any disease is detected, whether this is likely to crop up in your future.
Exactly, exactly. You know, it's important to note this is not a treatment for Alzheimer's disease or cognitive impairment, but we do feel like being able to identify individuals who might be in the earliest stages of diseases, they would be the best candidates for when treatments do become available.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about changes that you've detected in studying the retinas of animals, well, what kinds of changes? Visible changes or otherwise?
Right. So the instrument that we use is called, the technique we use is called optical coherence tomography, or OCT. And OCT uses a very low energy beam of light, and we shine it in their eye, and then the reflection generates an image of the retina. So it's not something that can be seen just by looking in the retina, but it requires this tool called an OCT. And the retina is a structure. It has many layers. Sometimes those of us in the field refer to it as a layer cake. One of the layers of the retina gets a little bit thinner in animals that are prone to develop disease, and then in individuals we know have Alzheimer's disease, the inner layer of their retina is thinner than their similarly aged healthy people.
Mm-hmm. And we should mention here that you, Heather, and Tricia, you're not looking for subjects, right? Because, Tricia, as you mentioned, you'll be drawing on data from this Family Transitions Project, which goes back decades.
That's exactly right. We're interested in looking at whether these long-term stressors that people might experience, if that might contribute to cognition. So we've shown in our work that it does contribute to physical health, and it can contribute to relationships and development. But we've never looked at cognition per se. We've never done a host of cognitive assessments that can tap different areas of the brain. So that's new for our participants. But that's exactly right. As much as we would love to recruit people for this particular study, we would like to use the participants that we have data on for the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more, Tricia, about the type of data that has been collected over the past 30 years. You get together with them, your team members get together with them and want to gather what data again and again?
Sure. So this project started in 1989, and we have eight rural counties that this study originated from. And at that time, we were interested in looking at how people were faring from the economic downturn from the farm crisis that was happening in the United States. And at that time, we had a 13-year-old adolescent who was the focus of the study. That would be the Generation 2 sample. And we also looked at their two-parent families, which would be the Generation 1. And as these Generation 2 participants have grown, we also look at their children. So this is really a three-generation study of rural Iowa families. And so we've looked at all kinds of things over and over again. We've looked at their parent-child relationships over time. We've looked at their sibling relationships over time. We've looked at social behaviors, economic behaviors. We have field interviewers that go to participants' home. Again, we're so fortunate that we have people who are willing to let us into their homes over all this time. And field interviewers go into their homes and participants fill out questionnaires. And we've been lucky enough to have participants who will do family interactions on video that we then look at how they're interacting with each other. So we've been able to collect this data, and we feel that we are in a good position to be able to say, yes, these long-term stressors, like I said, such as economic hardship, might impact how they're aging.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined us, Tricia Neppel is with me this half hour, along with her friend, as she said, and colleague, Heather Greenlee. They are both at Iowa State University, a social scientist and a biomedical scientist, teaming up on this research to look at a bunch of data, including how our retinas may indicate or not whether dementia, Alzheimer's, is in a person's future. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Let me go back to you, Heather. When we look at the type of data that Tricia was describing there, this study that goes back to the late 1980s, and what do you have any guesses on how the retinal data will match up with the data on stress and so forth that's been collected over these decades?
Well, so Tricia might have to jump in, but I do think she's done some analysis looking at overall health and stress over the long period of time. And so I do believe that long-term stress is correlated with not as good of health. And so there's also a correlation between health, you know, an individual's robustness and their risk for cognitive decline. So, you know, if you... so we have reason to believe that pardon, we have reason to believe that retinal thickness will mm-hmm. will correlate with a person's stress history, if you will.
Yeah, right. So it could be that those who experience high levels of stress might, and coupled with the fact the thickness of their retina, they might be the most at risk, for example, to have cognitive decline over time.
Mm-hmm. People under stress exhibit that stress, especially if it's stress that they have to endure over weeks, months, maybe years, we can see that expressed in their physical being, maybe their skin, their hair, their face. So do we know how much that is expressed in the eyes? Does eye color or anything? Do we know anything about the way the eyes may reflect the general health of the person, Heather?
Well, so I think an ophthalmologist would tell you that there are a number of parts of the eye that do reflect an individual's health. In terms of the retinal thickness, so the specific measurement that we're looking at, for the most part, it seems that retinal thickness is affected mostly by brain health, right? So if someone, there are a couple of neural diseases. Parkinson's disease is another one where we know the thickness of the retinal layers is affected. Mm-hmm. But in terms of just kind of general health, the measurements that we're looking at specifically do seem to be pretty correlated just with brain health.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Among the primary research questions in this study are also gender differences, Tricia?
Yes. Yeah, so one of the goals that we have is to look at are men and women behaving differently? Are their outcomes different based on their gender? In our study, in the past, we've shown there really aren't many gender differences in terms of social indicators, but I guess we'll find out if that's the case over this period, you know, this long period of time, you know, to look at something from 30 years ago and to look at something today, that's a long period of time. But so far we haven't had gender differences, but that doesn't mean that we won't show any here. And of course, we don't know if there'll be gender differences in terms of the retinal scans.
Mm-hmm. When we sort of broaden this topic out to Alzheimer's, Heather, turning to you as someone who is a professor of biomedical sciences, how much of Alzheimer's do we understand? And Alzheimer's is the majority of diagnosed dementia in this country, right?
Right. So I should say that I'm trained as a cell biologist, and Alzheimer's is a disease of a human. Mm-hmm. So we understand, honestly, a lot about the cell biology of Alzheimer's disease. There are a couple of proteins that we know cause problems. If you may have read about, or you may have heard of amyloid beta, so that's a protein that's on the surface of neurons. It accumulates in the brains of people with Alzheimer's disease, and we know that that misfolded, accumulated amyloid protein is a big problem in Alzheimer's disease. There's another protein inside of neurons that gets tangled up called tau, or tau tangles, and we know that that's not good for neurons either. In terms of, you know, inciting, and then there are also people that do imaging of different brain regions, and there are some brain regions that are affected. They are smaller in people who have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, similar to the way that the retina is thinner in people who have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. But in terms of how that initial, how those initial misfolding of the amyloid protein and its accumulation happens, that we know very little.
Okay, so when we talk about causes and risk factors, there are a lot of questions.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. We have about 5 minutes left, and I'm wondering what else in this area needs mentioning, having to do with the research that you're embarking on.
Yeah. So we want to make sure and mention Dr. Natalie Denberg. She's an associate professor in the Department of Neurology at University of Iowa. And in essence, she's kind of the third leg to our three-legged stool of this project. She has expertise in assessing cognitive function. So that's one of the things that I knew was missing when we first started thinking about doing this project, is neither Tricia nor I had expertise in measuring cognitive function in detail. And so she really, really provided that important expertise. Mm-hmm. I should also say that she had a group of participants in a study she has been running for a number of years, and we were able to get preliminary data on those participants to show that there are certain areas of cognitive function that do seem to correlate with retinal thinning. So we have some preliminary data that makes us very optimistic about this work, and that's all thanks to Dr. Denberg.
Mm-hmm. To your knowledge, is this type of collaboration that you have, how unique is it, Tricia?
I think it's very unique. I don't know. I do think that there is more interest in collaborating across disciplines. I think more and more faculty are trying to think outside their box and to collaborate with others outside of even their own department or college. But I don't know how many collaborations occur between, you know, the College of Human Sciences and Biomedical Sciences. So I think that's really unique. In fact, I don't want to speak for Heather, but I think this may be one of the first times she's, you know, thought about human eyes rather than animal eyes.
Right.
So that part is very, very unique. And you know, we've joked that as we've been thinking through this project that we live in two different worlds, and you know, you have to speak in my. I don't understand what this means in your world, and vice versa. So,
right.
You know, even the way we speak and the terms and the language we use is different. So it's very, yeah, it's very unique.
Yeah, Heather, you find that also to be a challenge. You say two different worlds. Tricia says there too. So, do you need to create your own translators? You need to sort of say, okay, I have to work a bit differently than I would with the other colleagues at in biomedical sciences at ISU or anywhere in the country.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it makes me a better communicator, because I really need to think about what I'm trying to communicate to somebody who doesn't use the same lingo as I do and doesn't have the same background. And so I think it helped me to understand why these cross-disciplinary collaborations are rather rare, because it takes a lot of time and energy just to get so you can really talk meaningfully about each other's science with each other.
Mm-hmm. When you, Heather, your expertise has been in studying non-human animal eyes. I wonder, how different are bovine eyes than human eyes, for instance?
Right. So there are some differences. They have a lot to do with the way the types of things that cattle need to see compared to the things that humans need to see. In terms of the arrangement of the cells and what the cells do, that's pretty similar. Cattle don't need to drive or read, and so there are some special structures.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, right. There are some special structures that humans have that cattle don't.
Right.
And we had to have some special equipment built in order to image the eyes that is slightly different than the equipment that's used for humans.
Right, and the wiring to the brain can be very different. I just know with my dog, I'm always fascinated about what my dog can see better than I can or not as well. Movement is huge. Color, not so good there, right?
Right, yeah, that's correct. That is correct. They have a lot of people think that they can't see any color. They can see some color, but it's a different range of color than what we can mm-hmm. see as humans.
So as we finish up here, what are your plans, your next steps here in the coming weeks? I think this grant was awarded back in September, if I am remembering correctly. What happens from here on out?
So our next steps are we're still in getting our team in place and making sure we're all of our protocols and everything are set and. But our next phase is to start training our staff. We will actually do telephone calls with our participants and ask them to participate in this particular study. And then from there, we ask them to go to their local eye clinics. And we should say that these OCT scans are very painless and non-invasive and they happen very quickly. And people often get OCT scans at their local eye clinics anyway. So we'll ask participants if they'd be willing to go to their local eye clinic and get their scans. And then we also have field interviewers that go to their homes and we'll help them through that process. And they'll fill out questionnaires and engage in these cognitive assessments. And from there, it gets back, all that information gets put back to us, and we start looking if there's any correlations between all of the stuff we're looking at.
Okay, and very quickly, when should we hear some results? Months, years?
Probably by the end of this year, we'll start to be able to dive into some of this, some of our findings.
Okay, we'll check back perhaps. Thank you very much. Tricia Neppel and Heather Greenlee of Iowa State University teaming up on some new research looking into how an image of your retina may help determine your risk for Alzheimer's disease even before other symptoms are detectable. Good luck with your research. Very important. Thank you very much, Tricia and Heather.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Coming up after a short break, I'll talk with the co-hosts of a new podcast series that looks at the People's Republic of China, connections to Iowa. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment.